From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're here. What a week we've had. And this is Trump time. And I think it's going to be like this for 4 years. He's not slowing down. He's like a happy warrior. He's not getting stressed out. I actually think the more he accomplishes, the happier he gets. And unlike last time where no matter what he did, it was Russia. He didn't really win the election. Hillary Clinton was, you know, all the problems in 2016. I remember it like it was yesterday. And now he's just president. People are making decisions about what he's saying rather than whether he should be there. And that, to me, is a huge difference. We're going to talk to the Minister for Foreign Affairs of Finland, Elina Valtonen, and she's going to be with us at the bottom of the hour. We have a lot to discuss. Vice President Vance just had a huge speech where he was eviscerating all the Europeans for the lack of free speech, for not spending on defense. We're going to do the exact opposite of the previous administration. Delivered impeccably, written speech, wasn't a temper tantrum, but it was direct. So I'm sure the Europeans aren't going to like that. I don't know how much it matters. He's laying the groundwork for a new temperature in town out west. And if you want to mock Donald Trump and you want to mock the administration, go ahead. We're not going anywhere and they're not changing. Senator Shelley Moore Capito joins us now, Senate Appropriations, Commerce, and Rules Committee. And with her, she was able to help Lee Zeldin get in direction to find out there's about $20 million worth of climate change money that was put out by Joe Biden before he left. And most of it also coexists and coincides with Palestinian support, which is, by the way, the theme of almost every campus riot that we see. Senator Capito, welcome back.
Good morning, Brian. Yeah, it's nice to be on. And you're right. It's a quick pace in Washington and really around the country as President Trump's moved forward with his team. So we're enjoying it. It's hard to keep up with, but we're ready.
Yeah, I know. But what about what Lee Zeldin did at EPA? Tell us what you discovered. Yeah. And you really led him there.
I did. I mean, probably through the year last year, we discovered that the EPA had intended to give hundreds of millions of dollars to groups that we did research on that basically said the road to America flows through Free Palestine, anti-American rhetoric on their websites, anti-law enforcement. And they were going to give hundreds of millions of dollars. So we blew the whistle on it, I believe, at the end of last year, the beginning of last year. And now that Lee Zeldin's in, he just yesterday announced that one of those grants, $50 million to Climate Justice Alliance, will not be going forward. And I hope that's one of many announcements on this basic waste of money.
So how about this, Senator? Can I just ask you this?
Yeah,
The coinciding of the climate movement, which are radical, irrational people, in my view, along with the radical, irrational people, many of which are Americans, on our campuses. You're saying the money is bad enough it's going to climate change, but it's really going to the anti-American, anti-Israel movement, pro-Palestinian movement.
Absolutely. Hands down. And it's not like they're trying to hide it either. It's very obvious through their advocacy groups. They were just in the Hart building at the middle of last year protesting in favor of Hamas. That one group, and you're thinking, well, they say, well, this money isn't for that. Well, we know how that goes. I mean, it's all fungible. You bring $50 million in, you're going to have money for everything. And so Lee Zeldin is going to do a great job clawing this money back, getting rid of the waste. One of the EPA staffers was videoed saying, yes, here at the end of the Biden administration, it's like dropping gold bars off the Titanic. I mean, how's that make you feel as a responsible taxpayer? Not good.
Yeah. Well, yeah. How do you explain the DOGE, anger towards DOGE, and the pushback, 14 attorneys generals trying to slow down the dissolve of USAID, and now they're trying to say Musk has no ability, should have no access to Treasury to find out where the bills are coming in and going out? Why the pushback? If there is fraud and abuse, we're not talking about pro-life movements or things that are traditionally associated with Republicans. We're just talking about fraud and abuse. What is the problem?
Right. Well, I think, you know, it's the uncovering, I think, of a bureaucracy that's become very bloated and comfortable. And many organizations have been stood up that are sort of sucking off the federal government and our taxpayers that really aren't effective. They don't go into work. They advocate for things that are against our government, as we just spoke about. You know, what I'm telling everybody is calm down. Calm down here. Why wouldn't we want somebody who has the ability to use AI and very bright people to go in and look under every corner of our government to find waste, fraud, and abuse? I mean, I think this is what we've always said we would do, but he's doing it. He's doing it boldly and loudly and maybe a bit differently. But look what he's already found. He's found areas in healthcare and other areas where we just have been getting gouged. And so that time is over. And so I'm supportive. Somebody asked me the other day, what grade would I give Elon Musk? I said A-, and then I thought, well, I don't know why I gave him a minus, except for maybe sometimes I think the way the news is delivered is a little harsh or maybe not totally buttoned down. But, you know, I'm supportive of this. I think it's time we shake it up. And you know what? The president told everybody this is what he was going to do. And so I think promises made, promises kept in his case.
So when you talk about waste, they say that there's billions that are just wasted, but not for anything, just for the American taxpayer. The IRS paused processing of new ERTC claims in 2023 because of rampant fraud, initially estimated at $55 billion. This in the Wall Street Journal today. They said in 2021, Social Security Administration's full death benefit master file to prevent payments to dead people. The Biden Treasury last month said it prevented and recovered $31 million in improper payments and fraud over 5 months. Over 5 months. Why would you not, Pete, want the best forensic accountants in there or people who understand systems, as you mentioned, AI? The IRS improper payments increased under Biden. They said, according to the Wall Street Journal, that Biden officials also eased income verification of Obamacare subsidies, Medicaid, and other welfare programs. The Health and Human Services Department last year estimated that $85 billion of improper payments in Medicare and Medicaid. And if you ask Musk, he says the real gold is going to be found in the waste around Medicare. But, of course, the messaging is they're looking to destroy Medicare. No, the waste around it is what you're looking to rein in.
Right. And I think if you look at it as if you have Medicare and you're hearing this and you're hearing the opposition that tells you we are, you know, they're going to take Medicare, what you should remember is if we go on the way we're going on, Medicare is not going to be there in the form and fashion that it is right now for you today. You would want people that are not entitled or overpaid or dead people or whatever the system is doing, you would want this because this is going to elongate the life of Medicare and Medicaid for everybody. And so this is what I think people need to keep. This is why I say calm down. The good's going to rise to the top. The things that are legitimate and are warranted payments or help or whatever or grants, those are going to be fine. Those are going to be fine, but the others aren't. And so I think, you know, with the systems that you can run, I think they're also finding that a lot of these, and we've known this too for years, is that a lot of the computer systems that are used in the IRS and others are so antiquated they can't even run systems on them to really find the abuse and the neglect of making sure our tax dollars are paid properly. So I think this is a great exercise for us and something that we should continue and be actually excited about.
So what are you doing with the Inflation Reduction Act? You're investigating where this money's gone. What it was, by the way, they brag on the fact that it was never written to adjust to address inflation, which is incredible to me. But that's what you're focused on also. What else have you found in there?
Well, what else we found in there, and Lee Zeldin pointed this out at the end of or this week, is he found an account that had removed the money from the EPA because they hadn't been able to get it all out the door, drop that gold bar yet. It's sitting over in a bank. Now, what kind of transparency and accountability is that if they're already offed it to a bank, but they haven't distributed it to eight different groups yet? That tells me they didn't have their ducks in a row, so to speak, to be able to legitimately flow that money out. That's $20 billion. So what we're looking for is as much of that grant money and all that to claw back to use for things like border protection, national defense, energy deployment, and tax relief for American working families. The IRA is a giant waste of money, in my opinion. It had just bloated billions of dollars to their favorite causes, and I don't see any results that have made anything here look a lot better.
I want you to hear something from the 1990s. Featuring Al Gore and Bill Clinton, cut one.
This report tells us how to cut waste, cut red tape, streamline the bureaucracy.
I've read it, and where it says the president should, the president will.
One of the commitments that I made to the American people was that we would do a better job here in Washington in rooting out wasteful spending. It means cutting some programs that I think are worthy, but we may not be able to afford right now.
And then Al Gore and Bill Clinton together talked about consolidating the FBI into some type of different agency. They talked about cutting entire divisions, the same thing that Trump is talking about and Musk is leading. So what changed?
Well, you know what? I think what changed is the nerve to actually do it.
Yeah.
I think President Trump has the nerve to move forward. He has the business acumen to be able to recognize that you can manage your money much, much better. And so I think really, honestly, I think it's and I don't even know if nerve's the right word. I think it's the steely resolve to do it and take the arrows and keep on moving forward. And you can see throughout his cabinet, many of his cabinet members are moving forward with things that have needed to be done, kind of root out the bureaucracy that's been there. That's what happened. Every time the president comes in, you have the same rooted bureaucracy that's immobile and doesn't want to move, and this bureaucracy doesn't want to come into work. So you know what? He's like cleaning house.
I like it. And lastly, how's the communications been between the White House, the Senate, and the House? I mean, you have a president that's so hands-on. It's unbelievable with you guys, it seems.
It is. We were down at my first trip to Mar-a-Lago last weekend. The president was there. I was lucky enough to be at his table. It was a great way for us to just kind of, sit down and talk about where we are, where we want to be. We all know Vice President Vance very well. He was one of us for 2 years, short period of time. But so the communication is really as good as I've ever seen it.
Thanks so much. Senator Capito, it was exciting time. Jim Justice giving you a hard time?
Oh, no, he's great. We're having a good time together, and he's going to be a great member. I'm really enjoying having him there with me.
So does he going to let you get on his plane, make it a little bit easy to get to West Virginia?
You know, I haven't worked that out yet.
I'll see what I can do.
I'm working on it.
All right. Senator Capito, okay. Go get him. Thank you. 1-866-408-7669. Squeezing some calls. We have so much other news, too. As the President of the United States goes to Mar-a-Lago, the Vice President's now in Munich. The Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, is heading there, too, as the Secretary of Defense, Hegseth. And we've got to give you the latest on the Russia meeting that's going to happen with Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump, maybe in Saudi Arabia. Don't move.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This episode is brought to you by MeUndies. Underwear drawers are like the Wild West. You never know what you're going to pull out or what shape it's in. So upgrade your collection with the buttery soft comfort of MeUndies. MeUndies signature fabric is as soft as a warm hug from your favorite sweater. Plus, it's breathable and oh so comfy, making it ideal for all day wear. Get 20% off your first order, plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/Spotify with code Spotify. That's MeUndies.com/Spotify, code Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Upgrade your business with Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. Shop Pay boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning fewer carts going abandoned and more sales going cha-ching. So if you're into growing your business, get a commerce platform that's ready to sell wherever your customers are. Visit Shopify.com to upgrade your selling today.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Trump, Elon, and their minions are trying to gut government services and push us into a constitutional crisis.
We are facing, I think, a real constitutional crisis.
A constitutional crisis?
Well, then we really do have a constitutional crisis.
We are basically on the cusp of a constitutional crisis.
You know, if the president started ignoring the courts and just bulldozing through, like let's say Joe Biden did when he decided to forgive student loans, even though the Supreme Court said that a president could not forgive student loans, that would be a problem. So this is the president of the United States letting the courts get in the way of DOGE doing their job. Keep in mind, I'm sure most of the DOGE staffers are Democrats. They were told to go in and fix it like it was SpaceX, fix it like it was the boring Institute, not boring as in not fun, but boring. They had a tunnel program or the chip program that he has for brains or Tesla. Go in there and use your cutting edge technology and know how. It was brought up yesterday, I think, with Laura. The Treasury Secretary says they're running their billing at Treasury off COBOL, which people tell me is like one of the first computer languages. So why would you not want to be more efficient? Instead, these people are insane. I don't get it. This isn't a different point of view on Roe v. Wade. This is crazy, especially because historically, the Democrats have run on being more efficient with government. Here is Pod Save America. This is Tommy Vietor and John Lovett and John Favreau, these guys from the Obama days. Listen to them in their podcast, Cut 3.
I don't want to seem like you're opposed to government efficiency, but obviously now they're just rampaging through like the government Venmo and shutting shit off left and right.
Not saying they're wrong. I'm just lamenting our situation.
Me too. No, I love it. I felt the same way because I've seen the messaging memos and it's like, you know, the young people, Gen Z, they like DOGE and what Elon's doing because, you know, they see government as sclerotic and inefficient, and they like the move fast and break things ethos, and they want to get stuff done, and they like the results. And it's like, yeah. Yes, of course. We all want that. We all know that government is slow. We all know that government can be inefficient. We all know that the bureaucracy can be bloated. We all worked in the White House. We tried to reorganize the government. We tried to find efficiency. It's hard to do.
And honestly, some of this is pretty annoying because it's some of the stuff we should have done.
Right, yeah.
You didn't know you could do some of this.
That's honesty, guy at a podcast. And if I'm a politician, if success leaves clues, Trump goes on these podcasts, talks for 3 hours. He doesn't worry about if he's trapping himself in a policy. If these guys were working for a politician, I'm wondering, would Tommy Vietor, John Favreau, who's the writer, really good speech writer for Obama, John Lovett, I don't really know, would they recommend their client talk like that, talk like Trump, go on and say, we should have done this and we should have done that. When I get in there, I'm going to do this and do that. Or would they say, go out, make up a song about Elon Musk and sing it in the winter in front of other Democratic members of the media about how bad Donald Trump is? I mean, that's literally what they were doing all week. But what people need to hear is this. You go on a popular podcast and you go on and just say, you know what Trump is doing? I don't like the way he's doing it, but I love the objective. And I just told you with Senator Capito, the Wall Street Journal says, okay, you want proof that there is waste? It's already been identified even before Donald Trump won the election. Here it is. It's in the Wall Street Journal editorial today. And they are finding so much more. I mean, do you happy with your government mailing things out to dead people? Are you happy with people getting Social Security? They're 150 years old. Of course not. So Elon Musk put this on his Twitter feed, which has like 100 million people, said, would you like DOGE to audit the IRS? 51% said yes. 40% said no. Guess who's going to the IRS to audit them? How about that? Turnabout is fair game. They're going. And they're going to find out where the waste is and where they're not maybe collecting the right amount of taxes. And we'll see if there's actually an agenda there. They're going in. They were in education the other day canceling contracts. So we'll go over that when we get back. I can't get enough of it. $55 billion cutting these educational programs that are going to no one. That's not Pell Grants. It's other things. Alina Valentin, how is President Trump's and his staff, his vice president, Secretary of Defense, his philosophies, his statements, how is that resonating in the world community? We'll talk to him next.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So on Ukraine, what Putin says that he really wants peace Do you believe him?
Yeah, I do. I believe he wants peace. I believe that President Putin, when I spoke to him yesterday, I mean, I know him very well. Yeah, I think he wants peace. I think he would tell me if he didn't.
That was President Trump always taking questions. That's where he is. He had a 90-minute phone call with Vladimir Putin. Keep in mind there's translation time, so it's probably shorter in terms of substance. But they're looking to jump off and get started. And they might be face-to-face in Saudi Arabia, which is dramatic. No one in the West has met. They're only sanctioning Russia, freezing their funds after their belligerent, unacceptable behavior in Eastern Europe and the invasion of Ukraine, even though they've taken brutal losses. Alina Valitinen joins us now, Finland's Minister for Foreign Affairs. Alina, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So what did you think of what President Trump said? He goes, I think they do want peace. That's what he thought he picked up from that. Do you think so?
Well, if Putin wanted to have peace, obviously he could stop fighting as we speak. He was the one who started the invasion in the first place 3 years ago. And, of course, there has been hostility from Russia towards Ukraine for more than 10 years now. So we do think that he really needs to bring something to the table. For instance, the 20,000 deported children he has illegally taken away from their families. Start with that. Start with something that there could be, first of all, a ceasefire, of course, and then a pathway towards credible peace.
So I agree with you. They're totally to blame. Do you think from their point of view, when the door is closed and they're being honest, this has been a disaster for them, losing hundreds of thousands of soldiers, billions of dollars worth of equipment? I mean, I saw that last year they lost 5,000 tanks this year.
It has been a total disaster for Russia militarily. It has been for the people. It has certainly been that for the economy and also politically. And therefore, it's extremely important that we keep in mind that the sanctions that the West, the free world, has put in place, that we really stick to those sanctions for the long term as well, for as long as we see that Russia does pose a significant threat to the transatlantic alliance and the values that we represent. Because if we were to let go of the sanctions, well, Russia would be happy. They could be exporting their oil without any restrictions and buying, again, say, military equipment also from elsewhere in the world. And that's not what we need at the borders of Europe.
I mean, if it wasn't for that invasion, you would not be in NATO, right?
That's right as well. NATO has enlarged in the meantime. And, well, the message is clear. We would more than welcome Russia and the Russian people to the family of democratic countries. But unfortunately, everything we've seen over the course of the past 15, 20 years from Putin's Russia, it has been quite the contrary.
So when you see that Zelensky right now says, I'm willing to talk, here's what he said, cut 18.
I don't want to meet just with Russians, just to meet for what? No, we see the order of meetings, as I said. The order is United States, Europe, then Russia. Be ready to this meeting.
So he wants to see some substance first, and Trump does think something's going to happen in Munich. Do you think something's going to happen in Munich?
Let's see what happens in Munich, but our message is that there can't be a quick fix to this issue. Of course, everybody wants peace, apparently, apart from Russia. Certainly, Ukraine wants peace more than everybody else. But so Russia really needs to bring something credible to the table. And at the same time, we have to remember that Russian threat is multi-domain, and it's apparently very long-term also, directed towards the transatlantic alliance, not just to Europe. We see all sorts of hybrid warfare that Russia is engaged in also globally. So we have to, together, the U.S. and Europe, create a credible pathway for, first of all, for deterrence, so that we keep Russia at bay and within its own borders. And at the same time, of course, not let Ukraine down, because Ukraine is very important to Europe. And of course, we have to remember that the rest of the world is watching. The Indo-Pacific is extremely interested what will happen in Europe in this regard and how we deal with Russia, who has been very hostile towards all of us over the course of the past year.
I mean, they're cutting cables. They're trying to influence elections. They're trying to take over Moldova in real time, let alone what they're doing to Western democracies. Could you describe what it's like and the feeling among the Baltic states, yours, Sweden, and others, about the threat of Russia?
Well, for Finland and the rest of the Nordics, well, for us, our geographic location is no news, and therefore we have always invested very heavily into our own defense. Finland has successfully fought off Russia in the past.
I know.
We have luckily remained independent. Also during the Second World War, during the Cold War and thereafter. And our message is that, you know, the threat that Russia is posing, unfortunately, seems to be there for the long term, and they only understand strength. So laying our weapons down, also the economic weapons, at a stage where Putin only has declared he's willing to engage in a conversation with President Trump, I think that would be the worst thing we do to ourselves. On the very contrary, I think we should continue working together, and Europe certainly will put an extra effort into securing its own future. Mm-hmm. And we have already come a long way in the past 3 years, and that will only continue in the coming years. And what I would also like to happen is that we engage in more free trade among ourselves in the democratic world, and not impose any new sanctions, but on the very contrary, let go of the ones that we have. And this also, of course, applies to Europe as well, because we have to stay competitive on the global scale.
So would you be disappointed to hear that President Trump met with Vladimir Putin in Saudi Arabia?
Well, I'm just saying that whatever he would engage in with Vladimir Putin, it probably won't be something that you can trust. And also, if you look at the reaction in Moscow and in Russia over the course of the past 24 hours or 48 hours, after what we have heard from President Trump and his engagement with Putin, they are more than satisfied, and they are even finding this situation ridiculous. So I'm pretty confident that this is not the position where the leader of the free world wants to be in. So
could you explain? I'm sorry, Alina. I'm talking to Alina Valtonen, the Finland foreign minister of foreign affairs. Could you tell me what you mean? So the fact that President Trump and Vladimir Putin spoke, Moscow is taking that how, and what do you think, how is that being relayed? What's that messaging?
All the reports we get from Moscow is that everybody is more than satisfied, more than happy, and they even find the situation ridiculous, as I said, to the degree that all of a sudden they are invited to the table to discuss, even though, of course, they know themselves that they are war criminals, essentially. So,
because the president said you can join they should be back into the G7. Is that one of the statements that they know is ridiculous?
Well, probably Russia would like that to happen. And now that in the past couple of days we have heard all sorts of concessions, basically meaning that the West would lay all the weapons down, so to say, what we have. Against this hostile nation, then, if I was Putin, I would be so happy, and also I would enjoy all the attention that he's getting now, and also in the possible negotiations in Saudi Arabia, where he will be again normalized as a political leader, and obviously he hasn't even been elected by his own people.
Absolutely. We know that. So do you think right now, do you think the sanctions could have been more strongly enforced? For example, India has been allowed to circumvent. China has been allowed to circumvent. Has Europe also been going through third party to get Russia oil and gas? And could we in America over the last 2 years have done more to pick up our exports of natural gas and oil to you guys?
Europe has done a fantastic deal over the course of the past 3 years, diverting itself away from Russian fossil fuels. And we have not completed that mission yet, but we certainly have come a very long way. Of course, are also engaged in buying more and more LNG also from the United States. And I think this is exactly the direction we should be taking also going forward. But the sanctions, you know, even though they are not perfect, they work exactly like they were designed. Because what we see happening now with the Russian economy is that it's everything short of collapse. So essentially, they have inflation of 20-30% even. Since they don't have access to international capital markets, they only borrow from their domestic banks, which are close to bankruptcy. So if we just keep up the sanctions pressure, I think there will be much more fruitful negotiations from the point of view of not just Ukraine, but also from the free world, where Europe and the United States, of course, belong to together.
And lastly, what percentage of the GDP are you putting into defense?
We are putting 2.4% of our GDP. And on top of that, we have a conscription-based army. So our army isn't even in those figures. We have one of the largest armies in Europe, in Finland. And the thing is, this is an existential question for us. That's why we that's why we have always
do you appreciate
so heavily into our own defense. And now we just encourage our friends in Europe to do the same. Yes.
France and Germany, when you talk to them, do they understand the need to be able to defend themselves? Wouldn't that build up their national pride? I know Germany's a different situation, but still, Japan is building up again. Can't we get, do you think they've gotten the wake-up call?
I think everybody's gotten a massive wake-up call in Europe. And the main wake-up call, of course, happened 3 years ago with the full-scale invasion by Russia. And now we just have to be working even more intensely on this specific topic. So investing into our defense and deterrence and building up our defense industry. And of course, in close cooperation with the Americans, because there are so many capabilities Europe can't even produce now and probably won't be even be able to produce in the short term anyway by itself. So we just have to work together. And I'm sure, well, there will be elections in Germany in a week's time from now. There will be a very focused German government as well who will engage in exactly this.
Go get him. Foreign Minister, Foreign Affairs Minister of Finland, Elina Valtonen, thanks so much. Enjoy the Munich conference. All right. When we come back, 1-866-408-7669. Fascinating perspective overseas. When it comes to their own defense, you don't have to tell Finland, you don't have to tell Sweden. They understand the threat. Hopefully people at home know you can't shut this off. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
It is pretty amazing that we came over the Ferris wheel in like 1910 and we thought, we're sticking with it. You know, we never tried to modernize it. We don't make it an octagon. We just kept it a circle.
It's
perfect. And it's
going to
do the same thing, just ball bearings and a big circle.
So what you're suggesting is we reinvent the wheel?
Exactly.
That was some of the magic in the morning. When you sleep in at home, you don't hear Fox and Friends. I know you're just getting up listening to the radio show, but when you sleep in, that is some of the stuff that is unscripted that happens on the show. Allison, you pulled that for what reason?
Just it's always fascinating to see the thoughts that go through your brain. Like, why is the Ferris wheel still there? Why wouldn't we make innovative?
We don't make it go faster. I mean, we don't. I mean, we don't pick up the speed at all.
But they've made like bigger carts that you can like go around the circle in. And also, it was like an octagon. Like, wouldn't it be a little more jumpy?
Not my problem.
Not your
problem. Everything else in life is improving. Like, cars, roads, everything, buildings, heat, lights, everything's improving. But the Ferris wheel, flatline.
Yeah, but know what else is not improving? Your Alexa in your office. Like, what was going on this morning?
Right. So I don't know. I just got this video that was sent out. Evidently, not only was my Alexa on, but it was blasting
Ariana Grande.
Ariana Grande.
Let's hear some of it.
That was my hook.
So they come up from Fox and Friends to hear that blasting on your floor to find out it's coming from your office.
So wait a second. So I guess it must be, I left the TV on probably. Probably something triggered the Alexa.
Play Ariana Grande. Play,
yeah, I guess so. And not only that, but loudly.
Really
loud.
See
how loud that is?
Like, I mean, what were you rocking out to before Fox and Friends?
I don't know, but my Alexa is barely listening to me now. I have one simple command. Alexa, play new country. And now it's just playing anything it wants. And Alexa's like, I'm done. By the way, do you ever feel bad for not talking to your machines?
I don't have machines at our house.
You have nothing?
No, we don't. So
I walk in every day and it's like ready to go. It's like, anything? And I'm thinking, no.
So you know what? You need to have some more little kids running around your house, Brian, because my kids, anytime they walk into someone's house with it, they have Alexa play all very inappropriate songs.
Really?
Like the silly potty humor songs for like that little kids find very funny.
Well, I didn't.
That you would find actually, you wouldn't find it funny at all.
Yeah, I don't like bathroom humor.
You despise it.
Yeah, I'm not really into that.
That's probably why you don't like my kids.
No, I wouldn't say that. I'm not like them. They're okay.
They're right.
No, they're the best.
They're super cute.
Couple of things. Did you see Linda McMahon yesterday?
I did not.
It was so bizarre because she's trying to collapse an agency she's trying to lead. So here's a little of what she said. That they said what her goal is. Cut 40.
Department of Education was set up in 1980, and since that time we have spent almost $1 trillion, and we have watched our performance scores continue to go down. We have failed in our mission. We are not delivering the kind of education that we need to deliver to our children.
So she's like, I'm going to keep Pell Grants. I'm going to keep some of it. But for the most part, we shouldn't do this anymore. And for me, I don't really get that. Because you might say, here's your money, states, but are you going to be happy with Massachusetts decides? Are you going to be happy with Illinois decides? Are you going to be happy with California decides? So, like, Republicans that want a different type of education, they're going to be totally unsupervised in those blue states. And then, vice versa.
And then without having any sort of national standard, is some of the states going to get that much worse and some of the states that much better?
Yeah.
There's already a big disparity.
And then you just shame people into saying, hey, I might be a liberal, but I can't raise my kids there. And that's the hope that people straighten out. And just because when it comes to kids, as we see with the Keep It Get America Healthy Again movement, that's not a Republican or Democrat movement. That's a healthy movement for their families. I guess that's the hope, but that's a long-term play.
It is, and where you live is important, too.
Yep. Back in a moment.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. You know, watching, you know, being on Fox and Friends this morning prior to this show, obviously, it was like being in a New York show. I mean, I had Tom Homan, who just was meeting with New York ICE officials, who met with the mayor, Mayor Eric Adams, yesterday to try to get him more involved in illegal immigration and scooping up the criminals amongst us, even though he's got a left-wing city council to deal with. And we were talking all about New York. So he was on the couch today, and we'll play some of those cuts from that interview because he denies there's any quid pro quo with the Trump campaign, who said, basically, if I save your butt, you better work with Tom Homan. So this hour, we're going to be joined by Brett Baer, as well as Ian Pryor, author of Parents of the World Unite, and he is a senior advisor at American First Legal, big-time attorney. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
President Putin and I agreed that we were going to do it in a very big way. There's no reason for us to be building brand-new nuclear weapons. We already have so many you could destroy the world 50 times over, 100 times over.
Yeah, they're talking about doing a major nuclear de-escalation with China. We'll see where that goes. Trump on the world stage taking bold hold of the war in Ukraine, nuke deals, Middle East conflict. His take on what we're at doing right now and where this is likely to go on all these conflicts.
Number two.
He was trying to figure out, hey, what's going on, Eric? What is happening? And we were able to get in the room and really articulate, what are some of the things that we need to legislatively address that is preventing us from getting dangerous people off our streets?
Tom Homan's mission is to seal the border and expel criminals, aliens in New York. Yes, Blue City cooperation. Can you believe it? One of what we can hope of, I think, are many. We have the details and the game plan.
Number one.
We all know that government is slow. We all know that government can be inefficient. We all know that the bureaucracy can be bloated. We all worked in the White House. We tried to reorganize the government. We tried to find efficiency. It's hard to do.
And honestly, of this is pretty annoying because it's some of the stuff we should have done.
Yes, those are Obamaites now with a podcast lamenting that Elon Musk is having all the fun. The Doge difference, all Elon's men diving into massive fraud and spending while Dems angrily mount pushback, stupidly not realizing it was Clinton and Obama who tried and failed to do this same exact thing. And that's where we land right now. Elon Musk putting up with a lot of turbulence, a lot of questions from the left, a lot of lawsuits. 14 AGs have sued the federal government to stop Doge from even existing, let alone going into the Treasury, the IRS, education, and everywhere else. To get out, get this, not push pro-life agenda, not build up the Defense Department, not do anything that was perceived to make Republicans look good, to gut waste and fraud out of our budget. It seems logical. They've gone crazy. Brett Baer joins us now. He's not crazy. Chief political anchor for Fox News, anchored special report. Brett, welcome back. Hey, Brett, are you giving me the silent treatment? Because it happens, but not usually on the radio.
Hey, Brian, can you not hear me?
Yeah, now I got it. Okay. Because, if you were mad at me, this is the worst thing to do to a radio host. We could handle this off air. So right now, this is just fascinating to see. First, let's look at the world stage right now. President Trump's been coming out talking, said, I talked to Vladimir Putin. And a lot of our allies are not happy about it. What's your take?
Yeah, I think that there's a concern about giving away the store, negotiating with Putin outside of Zelensky and what that looks like. I think that that's where the concern comes from. But clearly the president is heading down this path and believes that both sides want to get to a negotiated settlement. So I don't think we know what it looks like yet, but I think we do know that, it's probably going to go back to Crimea being in control of Russia.
Oh, you mean, staying in their control. The question is how much of the land they took after the invasion do they hold on to? So here's what Donald Trump said, cut 17.
They're having a meeting in Munich tomorrow. Russia is going to be there with our people. Ukraine is also invited, by the way. Not sure exactly who's going to be there from any country, but high-level people from Russia, from Ukraine, and from the United States.
And he projected that they would talk. So he wants to get these sides together. The way he's doing it seems to have Europe beside themselves. Here's what Zelensky said, cut 18.
I don't want to meet just with Russians, just to meet for what? No, we see the order of meetings, as I said. The order is United States, Europe, then Russia. Be ready to this meeting.
Right. So they want to see more of a format. Where do you think this stands?
Well, I think it's really in President Trump's hands to kind of get all this together. And it sounds like this meeting with the vice president, the secretary of state on the sidelines of the Munich Security Conference. He obviously, Zelensky met with the Treasury Secretary. That kind of lays the groundwork. But it sounds like there's going to be some kind of meeting in Saudi Arabia with the Crown Prince and Putin, maybe even President Xi, that they all come together to try to figure things out. Now, how Zelensky factors into that, I don't know, whether he's a part of that meeting or whether they meet first. Trump said yesterday that he thought that China could play a role in ending Ukraine. And obviously, he characterized his conversation with Putin as positive.
Right. And they're trumpeting that they've had great conversations and that Donald Trump's now in the lead there. I was talking to the Finnish foreign minister, and she was saying that that's the wrong thing to do because they are celebrating that they're now on the inside with the leader of the free world. Let's listen.
saying that whatever he would engage in with Vladimir Putin, it probably won't be something that you can trust. Well, if I was Putin, I would be so happy, and also I would enjoy all the attention that he's getting now, and also in the possible negotiations in Saudi Arabia, where he will be again normalized as a political leader. And obviously, he hasn't even been elected by his own people.
So there you go. As you see, they're not thrilled. They look at him as a pariah, and they feel as though he's deserved no trust. And I don't know. I guess their goal is total capitulation. But I don't see that happening, Brett.
Yeah, I don't see it happening either. But I also think, you know, the context of Putin as the invader needs to be a part of the negotiation. I mean, they did invade on February 22nd or 24th, 2022. And, you know, that's a fact. So, you know, what is the give up on the Russia side? We're always talking about what Ukraine's going to give up. What is the give on the Russia side, and what's the stick if they don't? I think the security agreement part of this is really the thing that Zelensky and Ukraine is most concerned about. If they're not going to be a part of NATO, what kind of security agreement from Europe, from the U.S., from wherever do they have in case Putin gets, you know, an inkling to go back after Kyiv?
So I asked General Keane this morning about what's the reality of what Russia is suffering. We hear about the tanks loss. We hear about the money. 40% of their income is going to the military. Cut 26.
Russia's hand in 2025 is going to be pretty weak. They just took 48,000 casualties last month and 48,000 casualties the month before. In October, it was 57,000. They've averaged throughout 24 about 30,000 casualties a month. I mean, that is absolutely staggering what I'm talking about here. And they lose 125 to 150 tanks a month, only able to replace about 25 and 30 out of the defense industrial base. He will have a personal problem requiring mobilization in 25 if there's no agreement. And clearly he is having major equipment shortfalls. There is huge amount of pressure. Plus, he's got everything on the table here in terms of his ability to continue in his presidency and his own personal survival.
So, and General Keane said he spent 2 hours with Trump at Mar-a-Lago. I think it was a few weeks ago. And he feels like Trump knows thoroughly what he's doing.
That's, you know, comforting, I think, to people listening to him. Keane is
the best.
Sage yeah. voice, and somebody who has a lot of experience and knows the situation better than most on the ground in Ukraine. So, listen, Putin has always been a guy who's played the cards he has much bigger than the actual cards he has. You know, I mean, he's been like this world poker player that is a bigger player in the world than perhaps his situation lends itself to being. And I think he's doing it again here, and maybe Trump is going to call the bluff.
So, Brett, you know President Trump for a long time, golf with him. What was he like last week?
As we did the Super Bowl interview, he was really engaged. You know, he obviously does his weave where he talks about everything and bounces around and you got to get in on the breath. But he's even off camera is, as I've told you before, I think he's very comfortable in his skin. He knows what he wants to do. He's, you know, not suffering any, you know, he's not defensive, I don't think. He's kind of just plowing through what this agenda is, and seems like he's having fun.
He looks younger than he did a few years ago when he was going through all the trials. Is that your impression? I mean, physically, he looks like he lost weight.
He definitely lost weight. He definitely seems more fit. And he's clearly energized. I mean, the guy is, for the stamina of, you look at the contrast between the two presidents, it's like night and day. And so he keeps going. He's got meeting after meeting. He's on phone calls. He's off the record, he is as engaged about every different issue. So, and then throws in some golf talk.
Yeah, of course, and that's right up your alley. You'll do that all day.
Yeah. So, yeah, of course.
What role is he playing in getting Liv and the PGA together? Did you discuss that?
Yeah, he had Adam Scott and Jay Monahan to the White House. I think he's talked to the Saudi, the head of the Sovereign Wealth Fund, the head of Liv, Yasser. And I think that they are trying to get together. And I think Monahan put out a statement about their meeting and how they're closer to a deal. I think, you know, he's a facilitator. I think it probably happens sooner rather than later.
Do you think, for someone who's semi-athletic of myself, to be this bad at golf, do you think there's something mental with me? Or do you think that I'm just not born to be a golfer? Like, what do you think it is from your perspective?
You just need a little time. You can make big strides in a short time, but you have to give it some time. And if you weren't on every show, then maybe you would have time to chip and putt.
Right. So go to see if I can go to ask Suzanne Scott to get me down to 3 days a week, and I'll tell her, Brett wants me focusing on my golf. He's seen me on air, and he thinks I should be golfing more. So
Short game.
All right, start with that. All right, Brett, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Have a good one.
All right. Listen, Ian Pryor at the bottom of the hour, but next is going to be your phone calls, or you can write me. I'm getting a lot of emails in, briankilmeade.com. And don't forget, this Saturday, oh, my goodness, I can't believe it. I could say this, tomorrow, Florida Theater. The theater is 98 years old. It's got two floors. We've opened up the balcony. It's beyond sold out. But since they opened up the balcony, they now have some seats up top. It's going to be a show like no other. It's going to stream on Fox Nation if you're not in the area. But hopefully, you know, Jacksonville's kind of centrally located. People in Georgia should be going. And Alabama if you start now. So I hope to everyone will go down and get a ticket. BrianKilmeade.com is going to be History, Liberty, and Laughs. It's a show that, put it this way, it'll be more than you could ever expect. Think about that. Back in a moment.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I don't know if it's just Massapequa, but we have an Italian guy in every corner selling cut flowers. So
nice. There's
really no excuses, right?
Do you have your gifts?
You got one too?
You have your gifts?
Yeah, I handled it because I'm traveling today. I handled it last night. It was quite emotional.
Really? Like what?
What'd you give her? Did you give her that diamond?
I'm going to have her send her a picture. I did get her something.
Good for you.
Right. That's one fantastic. Of the rare... No, I'm not saying.
One of the rare what?
One of the rare...
I might have been more prepared than she was.
It was one of the rare Valentine's Day times.
That's awesome.
I'm not saying it was better. It was good to be ahead of the curve for a
change. That's why I was always emotional.
I've never dropped the ball, but I've juggled it, you know?
She got you socks and you got her a diamond.
Right. I take socks. I'm not saying that. Yeah. The good thing is she's not up yet.
And then she wrote me and said, I was up.
That's fantastic.
And you know what's so interesting, too, is just in case, they played it at 7 o'clock because they knew she'd be up by then. That's what they said.
So she saw it two times, and now she's hearing it a third.
Right. I just got an email from Alex. Alex says, Brian, on your show, you said that Russia spends 42% of their GDP on defense. It's really 6%. So I just asked... Grok, the AI of Twitter. And I said, how much does Russia spend on defense? And Eric, you could chime in any moment if you want. Russia plans to spend approximately 13.5 trillion rubles, around 145 billion, on defense in 2025, which amounts to 32.5% in total government spending. That represents a significant increase from the previous year, setting a new post-Soviet high. So that's okay. I overstated by 10%. But still, 32% of total GDP, that's insane, isn't it?
Well, you're also assuming the numbers Russia's putting out are actually accurate. Like, you can't trust anything about that, no?
Right. I mean, they're not worried about domestic spending. Oh, what about the after-school program? We're not going to have under-the-lights basketball this year. That doesn't happen in Russia. Sorry, he's not worried about electoral points. John, you're in Virginia. Hey, John.
Hi, Brian. Thank you so much for taking my call. I appreciate it.
No problem. What's on your mind today?
I was just watching a couple of videos on YouTube today, and back in 2018, Trump went to the German UN delegation, and I saw a clip of them basically laughing at Trump, when he told them specifically, hey, stop buying Russian oil and gas because there's going to come a day to where that's going to be a serious problem and you might get cut off. And I just thought that was ironic after hearing the Finnish foreign minister talking about that somewhat.
A couple of things, John. You're right. Great memory. Yep. And they did. He said, what are you doing with Nord Stream 1, Nord Stream 2? He goes, you shouldn't have a Nord Stream 1. And that was one of the first things he said. They're like, oh, you're so nice. Source. No, he's like, why are you buying from? I'm protecting you. And you're making yourself economically attached to somebody you supposedly fear.
Exactly.
So that was important to bring up. Like, but they are worried. I mean, they're worried because they think Vladimir Putin is absolutely a modern day Hitler. And I think he is, too. I think he's absolutely terrible. I think he's a terrible human being. I don't think he cares about the Russian people. I think he only cares about accruing power. And I think he's a very paranoid guy who knows if he goes outside one time, there is so many people that want to kill him. And deservingly so, because he's murdered so many. So when you have this type of track record and you got nothing to lose, Trump comes on the scene and says, doesn't seem like a bad guy. We're going to talk about denuclearizing. And I don't really blame you. You know, for feeling threatened by NATO. They're too close. So I think Trump publicly could be negotiating publicly by making it seem like he's kissing up to Russia. Seem like he's got a sympathetic ear. Let Russia feel like they're gonna be able to roll Trump. But then when it comes down to it, I already cut a deal with Ukraine. They're paying for the arms that we're giving them. We're getting the rare earth that we need that we're not getting from China. And therefore, our next generation of web devices, AI, is going to be taken care of. So there's no way Ukraine's ever going to run out of weapons.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'd like it to be closed immediately. Look, the Department of Education's a big con job. We're ranked, so they rank the top 40 countries in the world. We're ranked number 40th. But we're ranked number one in one department, cost per pupil. So we spend more per pupil than any other country in the world. Norway, Denmark, Sweden, I hate to say it, China, as big as it is, it's ranked in the top five. And that's a primary competitor. We're ranked number 40. So if we're ranked number 40, that means something's really wrong, right?
Ian Pryor joins us now to talk about education. President Trump from the Oval, as Linda McMahon's formally offered up for nomination, had her day of testifying. She's going to pass over 50 votes, no problem. Parents of the World Unite, he wrote that book. He's a senior advisor, America First Legal. Member Stephen Miller founded that group, and exec director of Fight for Schools. Ian, so here we are. This is your breadbasket, right? We're talking about education, getting DEI out of education, maybe embracing our history. So why is it in the best interest of Republicans to collapse a division that now you'd have a person in charge that understands your objective?
Well, you know, there's a couple of things that you have to think about. First of all, if the Department of Education no longer exists, that doesn't mean that the functions that exist in the Department of Education no longer exist, right? So student loans would then go through Treasury. Enforcement would return back to the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division, right? So if we have school districts that are violating rights, which would usually be handled at first, at least, by the Office of Civil Rights in the Department of Education, now they would be handled by the Department of Justice, because there's a memorandum of understanding between the Department of Education and DOJ where, you know, and it's not that old, it's a couple of years old, where DOE will sort of handle the investigation at first, and then if it gets to litigation, the Department of Justice will take over. There's no reason why the Civil Rights Division at DOJ can't investigate these schools that are violating Title IX by allowing boys in girls' sports. And, you know, if you think about the Department of Education, it's like a giant magnet for teachers' unions, where they have a place where they can go control what happens at the local level. If you don't have that giant magnet, that place where Randy Weingarten can walk in, you know, in some future administration down the road and say, I want this done, this done, this done, well, that's going to be a problem for the unions, because now they're going to have to be dispersed over 50 states and thousands of school districts in order to enforce their power.
Here's the pushback. Becky Pringle, the Education Association president, willing to stand up to Trump and others.
We will stand up to McMahon and every other anti-public education politician elected appointed or anointed who tries to harm our students, our educators, and our communities.
So, I mean, number one, she should understand she has a microphone. She doesn't have to yell.
Yeah.
Number two is you understand that mindset, though, don't you?
Yeah, and that's what they say, right? They say if you're going to close the Department of Education, then you are somehow anti-public school. Listen, the first public school in America, Boston Latin, 1635. So for over 300 years, public education has existed in America before the Department of Education. We've had the Department of Education since, what, 1979, 1980? Mm-hmm. Getting rid of the Department of Education is not anti-public school. It's anti-federal government control of local public schools. That's what it is. People need to start pushing back on that talking point because they've been using that for the past 4 years, and it's absolutely absurd.
She said, McMahon said, I'm going to preserve core initiatives, including Title I money for low-income schools, Pell Grants for low-income college students, public service loan forgiveness. She said the Trump administration wants to do the right thing, and she believes it would take an act of Congress to abolish the department. She also wants to take special education and put it back to where it was, which is interesting because I don't know exactly where they're going to put it, but they said they want to separate that because it needs more attention. So these are some of the things that would work in your mind?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that there are ways to take all of these functions from the Department of Education and put them in other departments or agencies, you know, get rid of that center of power where Becky Pringle and Randy Weingarten get to essentially call the shots because that's what they did in the Biden administration. That's what they did in the Obama administration. And now we're saying, well, look, you're going to have to go back to the states, and the states are going to have a very different approach based on the state, based on the governor, based on their Department of Education. It's going to be a lot harder to centralize this. We're going to do DEI in education. We're going to do gender ideology in, you know, period three. It's not going to be easy when you don't have it all coming from some giant, ugly office in Washington, D.C.
So the whole DEI coming out, do you think it's starting to take place now? And are there schools pushing back?
I do. I do think it's starting to come out. In Virginia last week, the Virginia High School League said no more boys and girls sports. And they were one of the first, I believe. They started this in 2014, and they said, you know what, we're going to respect the executive order. And then what you see is some of these Northern Virginia schools saying, well, we're going to pull out. Maybe we'll pull out of the VHSL. Well, that's stupid because now you're losing opportunities for students to actually compete in athletics and be able to go on to college and compete in those athletics. Why? Because of this, you know, small minority of parents that are demanding that, you know, their sons play in girls volleyball or girls tennis or girls track.
Yeah, you said last week that you called for an investigation of five Northern Virginia schools districts for allowing boys and girls bathrooms and locker rooms in violation of Title IX. Because now with Title IX, there was a Joe Biden version of Title IX, and now is there a Donald Trump version of Title IX?
Well, Title IX is Title IX. Title IX has been around since 1972, right? What happened with the Biden administration is they created this rule saying, instead of sex, we're gonna destroy the idea of biological sex and instead create gender identity. Well, that was enjoined in, you know, 27 states. The Supreme Court refused to stay the injunction. And as a result of that, we go back to the old Title IX rules, which are very basic, very simple. Sex means sex, female, male. So what you have in these school systems is our policies that say if you're a gender expansive or transgender, you get to use whatever bathroom you want and feel comfortable with. So if you have a male that says, well, you know, today I feel like a female, and they go and use a female restroom and the female objects to it, they say, well, you're the one that needs to make alternative arrangements. You're the one that needs to go use a private restroom. Well, now you've treated somebody more favorably based on gender identity than actual sex. That's sex discrimination.
So Ian Pryor is with us now. So Ian, you notice the American people, you don't really hear the argument for the other side. This is like a 90-10 issue, don't you think? So you're doing something that's logical. So anyone listening go, I might be a left-wing Democrat, but I got two daughters. You want to go play soccer with those two daughters in against a male that feels as though he wants to be a female? Or volleyball, get the ball bounced in your head? Or get cut from a team because some transgender person takes the roster spot from your kid? You think this is an opportunity for common sense to prevail. What do you want? How do you make the most of that opportunity?
Well, I think that, I mean, obviously you have to have what President Trump is doing, which is he talked about this on the campaign, and day one, he comes in and says, look, sex means sex. If you were a school system, you're taking federal money. You're not going to get federal money if you have these policies anymore. But we also need states, state attorney general, state governor, to look at what's happening with the Trump administration. Now is the opportunity. You're right. It is a 90-10 issue. And what I find interesting is CNN is talking about how it's a, I think, 80-20 issue in their recent poll. What I think is happening is that Democrats, smarter Democrats, are saying, look, don't use this anymore. This is a killer. This is going to keep us in the minority for a long time. Stop arguing on this point. But unfortunately, that message doesn't seem to have gotten through to sort of the radical element that keeps pushing it.
What are some of the elements you'd like to see gutted from public schools aside from boys and girls sports?
Well, you know, look, I think when you talk about DEI and how it's used, whether you want to call it critical race theory or DEI, you know, teaching things.
1619 Project.
Yeah, 1619 Project, where, you know, what you do in these situations at these schools is you're telling kids that everything, our systems, our institutions, our constitution, our laws are all inherently racist, and you need to be fighting back against that and be anti-racist. And if you're not anti-racist, then you're a racist, right? What that does is it creates this, first of all, it creates weak individuals,
right?
It doesn't make mentally tough students that are prepared to actually deal with the real world. But it also creates students that are going to go out there and try and destroy the lives of other students because of, you know, what, a microaggression, because they were offended by things. That's not how it used to work when you were in school or when I was in school. And that's not how it works in the real world. So that needs to be taken out. And we also need to take out this restorative justice where, you know, somebody, because of their race, does something that gets them in trouble that probably requires significant discipline. But because of the race issue, we are not going to impose that discipline because of DEI and restorative justice. We can't have that. We need discipline. We need everything to be applied equally, no matter somebody's race.
I just want you to hear a guy that predictably is against what you're doing, Bernie Sanders.
Our job is not to destroy public education. It is to significantly improve it. And one way we do that, one way that we tell the world that in this country we understand the importance of education, is to significantly raise teachers' salaries. It is absurd that six hedge fund managers on Wall Street earn more money than every kindergarten teacher in America combined.
So I'm not really against raising salaries, especially in Virginia, where I remember we were at a soccer tournament, and I was talking to this woman that went to a local college who will come to me, and she says, I'm having my school pay for it. I go, why? He goes, because I signed a five-year contract that I'll teach for 5 years in the primary schools. And they told me what they were making, like $35,000 or $40,000 a year. It's such a valuable possession. If you look at the schools, I don't know if you've focused on that, it seems like a lot of the money goes to the superintendents and principals and vice principals, and not enough to the people grinding it out with the fourth graders and the fifth graders.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, the one thing he said there that I do agree with, yeah, teachers should be paid more. But unfortunately, these school systems are paying their superintendents $300,000, $400,000. They got DEI offices where the head of DEI is making $150,000, $160,000. You want to pay teachers more, start looking at the administration. What are they doing on a day-to-day basis? Look, in my county, Loudoun County, we've got a communications director making hundreds of thousands of dollars. What do you need a communications director for? What do you need a communications director for?
I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, sometimes you can get an intern to do sports communications to make sure your high school kids get some publicity because
make
your
sure
kids
go
averaging
right.
26 points a game. In terms of governors, do the Republican governors gotten the message that they have someone who's singing their song?
I think they have. And I mean, look, it's been shock and awe for the past 3 weeks with the Trump administration. And I think everybody is looking at this and saying, this is amazing. The amount of things that the president has done, especially on this, not just this issue, but every issue, it's unprecedented. So I think governors are looking at this and they should be saying, look, we are going to fight harder now. We now have backup from the federal government. We've been fighting against the Biden administration for 4 years. And like I said, just last week, at first, the Virginia High School Sports League said, well, we're not going to change our policy. And then, you know, Governor Youngkin tweeted and or posted on X and said, you have to change this policy. And then three days later, well, they changed course. So, you know, I think these governors realize that the administration, especially with their interpretation of Title IX and what they're doing with education, have really given them a lot of runway
right.
to go and enforce the law and enforce common sense.
Well, and what do you see your role is now? I know you're going to be an outnumbered later, but what do you see your role is now with America First Legal being that this you got momentum, you got a president, he gave you the green light, education secretary is going to be front and center. We're going to find out about a vote getting out of committee, which is going to happen. She's going to get and she's going to take over. And she's not afraid of the camera. How do you make the most of that?
Well, you know, look, I think we have obviously a Department of Education that is friendly towards our viewpoint, a Department of Justice that is friendly towards our viewpoint. You know, traditionally at America First Legal, we've litigated cases. We've gone into state court, federal court in various areas and fought on behalf of parents and students. But now we have a federal government that can also do that. So it's really highlighting, you know, continuing to litigate, but also highlighting for the administration, here are where the problems are. Like we did in Northern Virginia, here are five school systems that are, you know, really the heart of the problem. But it's not just Northern Virginia. It's everywhere. That, you know, I was reading about a school system, Jefferson County school system. I think it was out in Colorado. Just horrible stuff. And these are the kind of things that need to be brought to the attention of the administration.
But here's what bothers me, and I'll let you go, is that so when you let go of a lot of autonomy, now that you have Linda McMahon, Secretary of Education, and you say, I want to give power to the states that are doing the wrong thing will say, thank you. So California is going to get worse. Illinois is going to get worse. So, you know, Philadelphia is going to get worse, even if some of the outskirts other cities won't. Does that worry you?
It doesn't worry me, and for this reason. Just because a state has more power in what it does with its education system doesn't mean they can violate the law. It doesn't mean they can violate Title VI or Title IX or the Equal Protection Clause or the First Amendment, right? So the federal government still has the ability, and that should be the function of the federal government, to go in and make sure that these school systems, look, you can do what you want, but it better be legal. And if it's not, you're going to lose federal funding or you can find yourself hauled into federal court.
So stay all on top of it. Expect some pushback. But the bottom line is scores are too low. The success rate is not great. We're not trying to restructure things to change it. We're trying to save schools, and money's not the issue because the money's there. Ian Pryor, thanks so much. We'll watch you on Outnumbered. You'll be the guy in the middle.
All right, thanks for having me.
Back in a moment.
We're going to win so much, you may even get tired of winning.
Taking back America, the first 100 days.
You say, please, please, it's too much winning.
Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's just normal political they just lie. They cover their and they lie. I would have been very happy to have her on. And like I said, the goal was to release both of them the same day. They just got scared. They could have put her in. I would have held her hand. We would have had a conversation. I'm not going to be antagonistic. I'm not going to be I have no desire this into a viral clip thing.
Joe Rogan pushing back on a book that came out and with the diminished Kamala Harris camp has been saying about what happened. Joe Rogan made it impossible and we had one date and Donald Trump took it. And then I went to California. I couldn't go back to Texas. So he's just brought up in a conversation that they're just making stuff up now. And here's the problem. Now, I know that Joe Rogan's not I'm sure he's a tough guy, judging by his martial arts stuff, but he's not a mean guy. And unless he's being accused of something, he's not going to get his backup. I've listened to hours of him. So have most of you. But what have happened is she's got nothing to say. Unless she's going to say, you know, I was dating Montel Williams at a time in which I was still trying to find myself. And I was involved in the social circuit in San Francisco. I had a man walk up to me and say, you know, you could be an attorney general. And it spurred me to go to law school. And when I went to law school, I found you don't get those stories from her. Those are real life stories that would actually get people to understand her origin story and how she got where she is today. Many people don't know in California how it worked. And I got really lucky one time the sitting senator, my attorney general became a sitting senator, and I had an opportunity. I ran for it. I was able to learn a lot from a debate, which I didn't do too good, and I came back and did better. Those are the type of things that happen in a podcast. And then Joe Rogan would listen and wouldn't say, that's not true. I just fact-checked you. He'd say, really, what else happened? Weren't your father, you know, I noticed your father is a professor, but he wasn't at home. That must not have been easy. And then she would say, oh, it wasn't. I was raised really by a single mom. We could have used some help, too. But my dad was up at college, and they weren't speaking, and we just dealt with it. Those are the types of things where at the end of a podcast, people say, wow, what a great candidate. But she would have done none of those things. Therefore, it doesn't matter about Joe Rogan's availability. Podcasts are a new thing. But if you're an interesting person who has an interesting story, it'll help. If you don't, it's over.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're there. I am glad to be here because there's so much going on in this Trump era. Trump 2 is like it's on warp speed, and it's all of substance. Of course you got the thing where we're getting rid of the penny and plastic straws are now back. Okay, it's fun. But the other stuff, just major impact, and everyone's saying it. Democrats can't keep up, and I don't know why they're fighting the way they're fighting, and it's really on Doge. Shannon Bream is standing by. I don't know how she does it. Has to squeeze everything in just an hour for all week. Tommy Lahren at the bottom of the hour. She's actually in studio, host of Outkicks, Fearless. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
President Putin and I agreed that we were going to do it in a very big way. There's no reason for us to be building brand new nuclear weapons. We already have so many you could destroy the world 50 times over, 100 times over.
Yeah, the problem is we can't trust them, and I certainly can't trust the Chinese. That's why I got to keep modernizing. Trump on the world stage, taking a hold of the war in Ukraine, nuke deals, Middle East conflict. His take, his approach, and his ultimate aim, coming your way.
Number two.
He was trying to figure out, hey, what's going on, Eric? What is happening? And we were able to get in the room and really articulate what are some of the things that we need to legislatively address that is preventing us from getting dangerous people right off our streets.
So Eric Adams and Tom Homan joined us on Fox and Friends this morning together. Tom Homan's mission to seal the border and expel criminal aliens. And in New York, he wants to get some cooperation. Yes, Blue City cooperation is happening, but how much? And will others pick up where Eric Adams says he will leave off?
Number one.
We all know that government is slow. We all know that government can be inefficient. We all know that the bureaucracy can be bloated. We all worked in the White House. We tried to reorganize the government. We tried to find efficiency. It's hard to do.
And honestly, some of this is pretty annoying because it's some of the stuff we should have done.
That is the Obama boys talking out on a podcast. The Doge difference. All Elon's men diving into massive fraud and spending while Dems angrily mount pushback, stupidly not realizing it was actually Bill Clinton and Barack Obama you praised for doing the exact same thing. So, and what am I talking about? What I'm talking about is, I did not know this. I remember reinventing government, Al Gore. He evidently was given a choice by Bill Clinton. You could do a projects with me and kind of be a supporter of my projects, or you could pick something you want to do. And he says, yeah, I'd love to do it. I imagine because he watched his dad for years, he understands the makings of the government. And he wanted to redo the government. And he wanted to get spending under control. And he talked about spending $100 billion. He got to see this scene at the White House where they got stacks and stacks of paper. Why they don't have the similar attitude when Trump is trying to do the same thing through Elon Musk, I don't understand. But before we bring in Shannon Bream, let's go back to the 90s and to Barack Obama. Listen to this. Cut one.
This report tells us how to cut waste, cut red tape, streamline the bureaucracy.
I've read it. And where it says the president should, the president will.
One of the commitments that I made to the American people was that we would do a better job here in Washington in rooting out wasteful spending. It means cutting some programs that I think are worthy, but we may not be able to afford right now.
Yeah, and that was before the deficit was $39 trillion, not even close. Shannon Bream, anchor of Fox News Sunday, Fox News chief legal correspondent, author of multiple books, all good. And we talk about love stories at the Bible Speak. This is a love day. This is Valentine's Day, Shannon Bream. So a perfect time to go dust off the love stories of the Bible.
That's right. Or buy your coffee for the first time ever. Everywhere books are sold. Thank you for the commercial setup.
No problem. So where do you want to start? I mean, just talking about government saving money. Mm-hmm. I saw the Wall Street Journal today went and said, if you guys are doubting that there's massive fraud, read the editorial that they wrote prior to Donald Trump taking over. What are your thoughts about the Democratic pushback here? This is their line in the sand.
Right. And you got to wonder if the optics of this are their best decision. I mean, when you're out there and people are hearing about things like, you know, putting on drag shows in foreign countries and paying for that and for all kinds of other crazy things that are out there, I think most people say that is not why I wake up and leave my kids and drop everybody off and run to work and, you know, live this life of trying to put food on the table and pay my taxes so that I can fund this kind of stuff. So I don't know that it's Democrats' best argument. They can say, listen, we think Trump is an authoritarian and we don't like he's doing all these takeovers, but fighting for some of this spending that sounds so questionable to most everyday Americans, I don't know is your best pitch.
So the Government Affordability Office, the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, last spring estimated the federal government could lose between $233 billion and $521 billion in annual fraud. Okay. That's not Elon Musk. That's GAO. Mm-hmm. They also estimated that 11 to 15% of all unemployment benefits during the pandemic, fraud, $100 billion to $135 billion. Not Elon Musk. Secret Service found hackers linked to the Chinese government took at least $20 million in COVID benefits. IRS paused processing of ERTC claims in 2023 because of rampant fraud, initially estimated at $55 billion. Now they say it's $230 billion. So this is all real, and we're desperate to stop paying interest on this enormous amount of debt. Mm-hmm. So there should be momentum behind this. Do you fault Elon Musk and the Doge guys for not being more transparent? Not, I wouldn't say transparent, but not doing a better job on the PR? What do you think? Is there anything they could have done?
I don't know. I mean, I do think that people get very nervous when they hear that they have access to Treasury systems. There's been some misinformation about that. There's been some clarification about that. It was read-only information. One person had beyond that, and it was clawed back. But there were only a handful of people, even two that were admitted in these court battles, that even they can have an over-the-shoulder sort of look at what's happening there. There are a bunch of different lawsuits, as you know. One of them is going to be heard in federal court in New York this afternoon by these attorneys general who say there's so much risk of leaks, of hacks, of those kinds of things when you allow more people to have access to these Treasury systems. But the Trump team argues, listen, he is the executive. These agencies fall under the executive branch. And then if he wants to tell them, hey, this is my, you know, assignment to you as the executive that you go and root out corruption and fraud and waste, which both parties have talked about doing, then I, as president, have power to authorize you to do that. So we'll see which side of that the judge buys today when they hear arguments.
Yeah, happening today, federal judge in Manhattan will hear arguments at 2 o'clock. More than a dozen state attorneys general filed the lawsuit challenging Musk and Doge's authority. It says that there's a temporary restraining order in place right now that prevents Musk and Doge from accessing Treasury records. Lawyers for the administration argue that the temporary restraining order is causing ongoing constitutional harm to Treasury's ability to make management decisions within its lawful discretion. So do you look, Shannon, at just who assigned, you know, who picked that judge, and then we just assume it's a Republican or Democrat, it's going to go that way?
Well, they can pick the venue, not necessarily the judge, but they're going to file in places that they feel lean further left when they are challenging these Trump administration policies. The other one that's going to be heard today is here in D.C., which also tends to lean more left, especially when it comes to a conservative or Republican policy that's being challenged in court. But eventually these things take time. They'll bubble up through the circuit courts and maybe to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court can only take so many cases, and they choose which ones they take. They vote on which ones they take. So they're not going to be able to hear every single one of these challenges to these Trump policies, but they're going to probably hear some of them, and it's not going to take long to get there if they do this on an emergency basis.
So just to show you how America has changed and how it's all pure party, listen to Pod Save America. Tommy Veeder, John Lovett, and John Favreau all were with Barack Obama, cut three.
You don't want to seem like you're opposed to government efficiency, but obviously now they're just rampaging through like the government Venmo and shutting shit off left and right.
I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just lamenting our situation.
Me too. No, I love it. I felt the same way because I've seen the messaging memos and it's like, you know, the young people, Gen Z, they like Doge and what Elon's doing because, you know, they see government as sclerotic and inefficient, and they like the move fast and break things ethos, and they want to get stuff done, and they like the results. And it's like, yes, of course, we all want that. We all know that government is slow. We all know that government can be inefficient. We all know that the bureaucracy can be bloated. We all worked in the White House. We tried to reorganize the government. We tried to find efficiency. It's hard to do.
And honestly, some of this is pretty annoying because it's some of the stuff we should have done.
Right, yeah.
You could do some of this.
Mm-hmm. How about that? I mean, that's an honest podcast offering insight, not blatant partisanship.
Yeah, and the fact is that you have to do something that's very much an upheaval of the system as you know it to get things done like this. And I think most traditional establishment kind of politicians, whether they're left or right, they would be very hesitant to do what we see Trump and Musk doing. And I think that's an admission by those folks. Like, listen, we weren't really willing to go there. But what did our Fox News voter analysis tell us? More than 85% of people said they wanted major upheaval or significant change to the status quo. And that is what President Trump and Elon Musk are giving them.
So Eric Adams, the mayor, in battle.
Great interview this morning.
Oh, thanks. He went up for about 20 minutes for us. I mean, we're usually 4.5 minutes. So Eric Adams and Tom Holman just on the couch. And Tom Holman wouldn't see him. He said, you promised you were going to let us into Rikers Island. You promised some cooperation. I'm getting none of it. I'm coming to see you. In fact, you come to see me. And Eric Adams in between seems to have, the Department of Justice has stepped in and removed the charges against him for some corruption situations, and they were going to add to it. And so upset with the people in New York that some of these U.S. Attorneys resigned because of this. So Eric Adams says that nothing to do with cooperating when it comes to illegal aliens. Well, why did it happen then? Maybe Trump saw some of the targeting that happened to him, weaponization happened to him in Eric Adams' situation. So here's what Adams says he will help with. Cut nine.
Rikers Island is now having some of the most dangerous people in our city. And by having ICE on Rikers Island, part of our gang intelligence, using our intel with NYPD correction officers, we could identify those gangs inside and outside on the street.
Getting back in Rikers Island is a game changer. We can get, not only we get the bad guys before they hit the street, the intelligence of how TDA operates, where they're operating, all this intelligence they gather at Rikers Island, we'll have access to.
And now you're going to be able to send most of them for Venezuela, and you're going to be able to get there. But here's what you're not going to do. You cannot get Eric Adams to admit that sanctuary city status is bad. He said, I want people who want to come here, work, and pay taxes to feel safe. But what you don't understand, Shannon, you live in the law world, is that that person that lit that woman on fire hadn't committed a crime before. So he's here illegally, lights her on fire. You go, well, now we got him. Well, now you got him. But that woman wouldn't have went on fire and died the most horrific death imaginable if he was didn't feel so welcome and secure here. And so did Lakeland Riley's murderer was hanging out in a New York hotel before he went to Georgia and killed her.
Yeah, and I've got a friend here in the D.C. area, same thing. I mean, it was thankfully short of those levels of tragedy, but her son was hit by somebody who's here in the country illegally, drunk driving, almost killed him. I mean, he had numerous surgeries. His life was saved, thank God. But that person basically got sort of a slap on the wrist. And again, if they weren't in this country, he would not have had that drunk driving accident and almost killed this young man. So you have to have part of the argument about whether people should be here or not. And I did notice you pressed really hard with the mayor to get him to have some acknowledgement that there are problems with sanctuary cities. And you're right. He seemed very reticent to go down that path. But also at this point, New York is overwhelmed. They need help. They don't like the money that's been clawed back from them that they've been using to house and feed. And, you know, new information comes out every day. We're finding out that money was used to help people buy homes and cars and start, you know, all kinds of businesses and things. And I don't know the exact status of those people, but there are questions about that. And I think everyday Americans are looking around and saying, well, like, what about me? What about our veterans? What about, you know, just the out-of-whack federal budget, the enormous deficit? We can't just be all things to all people, especially if they've broken our laws to be here and be on the receiving end of those things in the first place.
So 4.5 million to Kazakhstan to fight against disinformation to identify it. You got $70,000 to fund a musical, a DEI musical over an island. You have $5 million in Bangladesh to help people to actually, Zambia, to help people, help the people of Zambia learn English. Really? It was $7.5 million. That's what we're spending money on? You know what? There's an after-school program in inner city New York that I know could use some help. Maybe be able to pay some coaches at a Boys and Girls Club to get some people down there. So there's no way people are going to put up with that. What you were referring to earlier is HHS's Office of Refugee and Resettlement had a spending released. $1.7 billion in dollar-for-dollar matching savings plan for cars, homes, college education for illegals. Small business loans up to $15,000. Cultural orientation emergency housing support, $12.4 million. And I'll add to that, too, all this for unaccompanied migrant children, too. 30,000 of which are missing in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So this is insane. This is something we're not going to tolerate, and this is where Democrats find themselves defending. I don't get it.
Yeah, and like you said, our first part of our conversation, is that the optic that you want, that this is where you're fighting? Listen, I know that they feel overwhelmed and they're fighting everywhere at this point because it's mostly in the courts, but they're doing what they can with, you know, these protests on Capitol Hill and at Veterans Affairs and the Department of Education, that kind of thing. But when you put up on a split screen, like, here you are, America, here's how far we are in debt, here's how much we borrow so that we can pay other people who don't like the U.S., versus the Doge folks that are out there that are trying to shine a light on this, I don't know that you want to pick a side, you know, that the most American people are not going to line up with.
All right. Who's on your show?
So we've got Mike Waltz. He is going to talk to us about all the foreign policy stuff going on in Ukraine and the Middle East and Iran and Israel, all of that, China too. And then we've got senators from both sides of the aisle, Barrasso and Kane, to talk about the funding battles and all the showdowns over Doge and everything else.
All right. Sounds fantastic.
What about you?
Tommy Lahren's going to be on tonight. We're going to have you it on Saturday night, rather. We're also going to be welcoming in Seth Dillon. From the Babylon Bee.
Yep.
And we're also going to be welcome. Who else do we have?
By the way, we're also going to take you live to the Daytona 500. Just if you have a little sports itch that we can scratch for you on Sunday, there you go.
Here you go. Senator Ted Cruz, Mike Rowe. So that's a show.
That sounds like a fabulous show.
Now, that would be a great musical. Instead of this DEI musical, the Irons are stuck with.
You know what? Mike Rowe has a wonderful voice. So you can ask him to sing.
He does.
You'll do the dancing. He'll do the singing.
And he'll do it in a jean shirt, which I find definitely encouraging.
See you then.
Yes. Shannon Bream, go get him.
Thanks. Bye.
Tommy Lahren next. Your calls. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Breaking news. The latest headlines. Exciting commentary.
People are aroused. I haven't seen people so aroused in a very, very long time.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
What I think the Europeans are fearing the most is that President Trump, for all of his negotiating prowess or what he describes as such, has already given the Russians two of the things they want the most. Basically, a statement that Ukraine will never enter into into NATO, if not never. And I think the second big point that he was making along the way was that the United States was not going to be part of any kind of peacekeeping force, whether it was a tripwire force or actual full peacekeepers along the border of whatever that border is negotiated to be. And so if you take those two together, those are two of the things Vladimir Putin wants.
And that of David Sanger says that he's wondering about the negotiations. I'm not, because I think Trump, whatever he starts, he could just backtrack and say, look, I'm going to put NATO back on. You're not cooperating. I don't believe you. I'm going to talk about peacekeepers, but I'll make them Rule 5 eligible. So if you kill one of them, you have war with every NATO nation. Sandra, listening in New Jersey. Hey, Sandra.
Hi, Brian. I want you to know I had trouble sleeping last night because of Hochul. I feel that she canceled her lunch date with Donald Trump, and now she's threatening to fire Eric Adams, and he's on the right side. He's doing the right things. So I'm a little concerned here.
Well, we got a bad governor, Sandra. Just terrible. I know you're in New Jersey, but she's terrible. She's in over her head, never meant to be governor. She's an accidental governor. Hopefully she loses.
The fast.
fast as 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks for joining us. We begin tonight with Musk and Big Balls.
Big Balls.
Big Balls.
Big Balls, who work for Elon Musk's so-called Department of Government Efficiency, Doge.
In the one case of the Big Balls kid, a literal teenager.
Big Balls online, Big Balls here. That Katie's talking about.
A 19-year-old that goes by the username Big Balls.
So that would be one way that we could refer to him.
Young computer whizzes, the aforementioned Big Balls.
Because who among us doesn't feel better about Big Balls,
Big Balls,
Big Balls in charge of American air traffic control?
Right. There you go. That was Rachel Maddow at the end. Tommy Lahren, host of Outkicks, Tommy Lahren, is fearless. I don't know why I'm embarrassed, but that is his nickname, and he does work for Doge. And that's, you know, you would think they'd go out of their way to try to find his name, but I guess he's comfortable with it. I guess, are you comfortable hearing it?
I'm comfortable hearing it, and I think that the folks on CNN and MSNBC like to say it. I really do. They act like there's this outrage. And what I love is they're so angry that they've got young people working on the Doge team. You guys want to win back Gen Z? Well, maybe don't say that young geniuses shouldn't be working in any level of government or shouldn't, you know, be giving anything back to their country. That's a great way to win back Gen Z, is just say that Gen Z is worthless. And again, I think there was probably a lot of Gen Zers within the Biden administration that were calling a lot of shots that maybe the president should have been calling, millennials too. But this whole outrage over Big Balls and the young people are running it and Elon Musk and he's got contracts for Cybertrucks. Yeah, those are useful. I'm not so sure a rap song in Gaza is useful to the American people or anyone for that matter.
What about a musical in Ireland? It's about DEI. I don't want to put you on the spot. I'm half Irish. $70,000 for a musical in Ireland?
I heard that and I was curious. I don't know what a DEI musical is. I don't know why it costs $70,000, but I would be interested to see what that production looked like. I wish we could have some footage.
Right. Allison, would you be able to get some footage? If you could just call the Ireland, just general, just pick, anyone will pick up. By the way, Ireland way to the left.
Yep.
I mean, they are pro, they're called what Israel's doing, genocide. They have sympathy for the Palestinian people. What happened? Am I putting you on the spot? Because they're my people. You should be asking me.
I think it's just a complex. When you're used to being beaten down, you stand up for those who you think are being beaten down. So I think that there's some internalization of something like that. So if they're so far left, though, why do they need a DEI musical? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, and if something's going wrong, don't sing about it.
Right.
Yeah, I never felt. The only thing I used to say, I don't like musicals, I don't get it. Until Hamilton, I kind of liked Hamilton. Did you like Hamilton?
I like High School Musical.
Did you really?
Yeah, it's a Disney Channel thing.
But, like, you'd have a play, and then they just stop acting,
no.
And they just...
Yeah, I'm not down for that. I don't enjoy that. That's not my kind of entertainment. I did enjoy High School Musical, because I'm a millennial of the Disney Channel era.
Who was your big one? Who was the big star when you were watching Disney?
I mean, Zac Efron.
Oh.
That's probably a big one. Hilary Duff, Lizzie McGuire. I mean, the millennials that are listening to this are getting very excited.
Just me, before me, you and I talking about.
Yes.
That. Do you sing?
No.
Right.
You don't want to hear me.
You
sing.
You try?
No. No. You don't.
Did you get
hear
pressure
it.
to be like a five tool player, to be able to do multiple things, like to sing, dance?
Yeah, no? I don't think. No, not so much. Pretty much just this, this. I think I could probably act. You know who else was singing this week though? They made up an Elon Musk song. I don't know if you saw it. They were doing
incredible.
A protest song. And if they keep doing that, we may never lose an election again.
Do you believe this? Do you believe someone signed off on that? Do you believe that they think that this is going to help them? I mean, it's crazy. But listen to some of the outrage about Elon Musk and the constitutional crisis that is not happening. Trump says, yeah, we're working through the courts. Cut to.
Trump, Elon, and their minions are trying to gut government services and push us into a constitutional crisis.
We are facing, I think, a real constitutional crisis.
A constitutional crisis?
Well, then we really do have a constitutional crisis.
We are basically on the cusp of a constitutional crisis.
And that's what they're waiting, but it's not happening. So I've never seen such flailing. I always try to flip to another channel and just say, what is their point? Sometimes it's easy. For example, Roe v. Wade, I know where you're going to stand. How are you going to go into the argument? Go find out about it. You debate all the time. You got to be ready.
Yeah.
But this, I don't even get it. I mean, I think people are embarrassed airing it. I looked at The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. He's laughing at these people, and he's a Democrat.
Yeah, I don't know why they pick this as the hill they're going to die on. I think you'd have better luck picking the hill of men and women's sports or BLM or Roe v. Wade, if Democrats really want to make a comeback, there are more popular things that are also not popular that would be more popular than defending waste, fraud, and abuse. And the way that they're justifying it, and it's really difficult for them to do, they're not justifying the line items like the DEI plays and the rap songs in Gaza. They can't defend that. They know it's ridiculous. So what they like to say instead is that Elon Musk is cutting all this money so he can give it to himself without any facts or details about how he's going to give himself and his billionaire friends all this money. But it's become about Elon because they think that that old tactic of just demonizing the rich will work. But that hasn't been popular since, I think, 2018.
Right. I hear you. Donald Trump and his billionaire friends, even on the tax reform, Republicans don't do a good enough job pushing back. The tax reform benefited middle class more than anyone. It was 1% off the top income rate because Barack Obama had raised it again off their income rate. The corporate rate, people say rich corporations, but who works for those corporations? They allow them to compete for other jobs and hire other people.
Right. I also don't know why this party would be arguing for higher taxes. It seems so bizarre to me that they really are off on this island and they don't know what they're doing. They don't know where they're going. I think it was 4 years of just taking a vacation under Biden, and now they're trying to find their thing and all their old things aren't working anymore. All the woke stuff, nobody wants to hear about the woke stuff. Nobody here wants to hear about taxation. Nobody wants to hear about endless wars. So they're trying to find their thing and they're not finding it.
I had Victor Davis Hanson on yesterday, and there was a story about they just looked at the Senate, like, where is this heading? So in 2026, it's almost impossible for the Democrats to win back the Senate. For 28 either, there's no indications in any red state that they're looking to flip to another Fetterman-like moderate character. And in the House, he expects it to expand. Can you imagine, which was ridiculously slim now, but can you imagine at the midterm of election with a lame duck president for it to expand? That would be unbelievable. This is one of the craziest things of modern politics.
Especially considering that just several months ago in November, we were wondering if we'd ever get a Republican elected again, if the Democrats were able to win, they were able to give amnesty to illegals, get them voting. I mean, we really were on the cusp of what I thought was a really dark era for Republicans. And now it's completely changed by the grace of God. We dodged a bullet. That was Kamala. Trump dodged his bullet. We dodged ours. But I will say, I think the Democrats are going to get it together. I think they're going to get it together over the next year. They're going to find somebody that is going to be the voice of reason. It's not going to be any of the characters they have now. I heard yesterday that Jasmine Crockett was one of the considerations for 28. And I'm thinking, if that's where you guys want to go, best of luck to you. You'd do better with Hillary Clinton at this point.
The congresswoman from Texas.
Yes.
She's smart and she's confident, but she's a firebrand. She's AOC, just speaks louder.
She makes AOC look demure.
Right.
That's another nod
really
to Gen
aggressive.
Z. They love that word demure, Brian.
Yeah, I love it personally.
A great word.
Yeah, I don't use it enough, but I do like it. I want you to hear exactly what Donald Trump's running on, because this is a cut from DEI Education Workshop. This is what's got to go. Cut four.
Today's virtual roundtable is entitled Identifying and Disrupting Your Whiteness, a workshop addressing power and privilege toward anti-racist spaces. The term whiteness refers to race privilege, a way of seeing the world and a set of cultural practices that are usually unmarked and unnamed. Whiteness is often unrecognized, particularly by people who identify as white, but pervasive in American society and a barrier to inclusion and equity. This Equilearn virtual roundtable, facilitated by Equity Fellow Dr. Sharon Rad, offers a space to examine one's personal, local, and immediate connections to whiteness and privilege, and consider how to identify and disrupt rather than perpetuate them.
By the way, well delivered. Such passion. I love this. Saying whiteness, they felt as though they had to define it. Whiteness, a workshop addressing power and privilege toward anti-race spaces. The term whiteness refers to a race privilege, a way of seeing the world. So, well, thank you for that. I had no idea what whiteness actually meant. But these are the types of things that colleges, schools, businesses put in play to say, hey, if you want to get this tax break, you better have one of these courses.
Disrupting whiteness. Wow. I would say it comes from a place of privilege to be able to say that you can disrupt another race.
Yes.
And then call that academic work. But speaking of academics, I'll tell you the one vulnerability that I am concerned about. We can do well. We've won back the working class. I do believe that. I believe we've won back the average American out there, the working American. I worry about our colleges still, because this is still going on in our colleges. There's not a lot that Donald Trump himself can do to disrupt that complex in academia. That is the last battleground that we need to show up at and we need to fight. And I think that there's a lot of gains. Elon Musk is wildly popular with Gen Z, with young people. I think Donald Trump is increasing in popularity with his podcasting, with Theo Vaughn and others. But this will be, I think, if there's any vulnerability, it's the college campuses. We got to show up there.
I agree with you. I think there's got to be a lot of pressure. I wonder where it comes from and how they plan on attacking it. I know this. CBS's poll last Sunday showed for under 30s, President Trump has 55% approval rating. The rest of the country, 53. Whoever thought that would happen? Tommy Lahren is sticking around unless something goes terribly wrong in the break. No, something's wrong. Tommy, this is true. You have to go.
I do. I have to go to Outnumbered.
You have to do television.
I do.
And then we're going to, could you be able to appear in the Saturday show?
I absolutely
on One Nation?
Can. Yes.
9 o'clock. All right. Fantastic. Tommy Lahren, get out.
I will.
All right. Back in a moment.
Illuminating, intriguing, inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
And now, Fox and Friends' Brian Kilmeade is definitely afraid of sharks.
It's Shark Week, and we have real sharks. Need proof? That's what they look like. A great white shark could be coming to your beach. Where that shark's heading, and does he have your name on his mind?
Surfers are getting eaten by sharks.
Yeah.
Blue whales attacking kayakers.
Wait, who's getting eaten
They
by
almost
sharks.
Got eaten by sharks.
At SeaWorld, how many sharks do you have? How do you see them? Why are you not intimidated by sharks?
Why are all the big creatures coming so close to shore?
Don't you feel like we're getting, there's way too many sharks? Why are the sharks so angry?
I was down in Palm Beach last week. I saw him.
Were you attacked?
I was always told that sharks don't like the taste of humans.
If you're ever attacked by a shark, punch him in the nose.
You're supposed to punch him in the nose.
We should stay out of the water as human beings until the ocean starts calming down.
One word. Pool. Go in a pool and stay away from the beach.
A spinner shark jumped out about 20 feet from me, just kind of at me.
There's a such thing as a spinner shark?
Yeah. Jumps out of the water and kind of does a spin.
Why did you play that? That is from, is that John Oliver?
Yeah, that was from John Oliver a while ago, but any excuse to play that. It was
right.
So well done. But did you see the video? This kid, Matt Wells in New Zealand, he's fishing in his kayak and a great white comes up behind him. It's a video, but actually the audio I feel like is more terrifying.
Wait, is it not the one the guy gets eaten by a whale?
No, that's a different one.
Wow.
He was swallowed by a humpback. That guy, this guy, he's fishing and a great white comes up behind, but we'll listen to a little bit.
Great white shark. Great white. Great white. Great white shark. Cutting the life bait off.
I'm out of here.
Oh, mate, get out of the rudder.
There's a huge great white behind me. Following me. He's still behind me. He's going at my rudder. He's just following me. If I get eaten, it's not going to be much fun. He's still right on my tail. He's following my rudder. Please don't attack me, bro. How do I get him to leave me alone? He's still right behind me.
Wow. And what happened? Did he survive?
He did survive. But what would you do? What would you do?
Paddle faster?
Paddle faster.
That'll be about it. I mean, what you do is you got to hit him in the nose, right?
But he's in his kayak still. So if he hits him in the nose, that means he's in the water with the shark.
Right. But can you hit him from the boat?
Well, he does later on in the video. He tries to, he throws a water bottle in. He said, I know it's littering. He's like, but I'm hoping to get him off my tail. And then the shark eventually went after the water bottle.
You know what's amazing, too, is like kayak sales must really be plummeting. I mean, you have one guy in a kayak gets eaten by a whale, and the whale immediately spits him out.
Because it's used to like super small krill, not a human in a kayak. Actually,
right, then
like
why
a
try it?
Well, probably our theory is he was above like a school of fish that the whale was going for and didn't realize he was above them. And the whale was in for a really big surprise, too.
Right. And I'm glad, you know, the whales have a reputation of minding their own business, except the killer whales, aptly named. Killer whales kill a shark. You know, the killer whales can kill a shark, plus they travel in packs.
The orcas are insanely smart and fascinating and terrifying.
Right. And we stopped doing that thing where they jumped through hoops because they killed one of the trainers at SeaWorld, correct?
They still have them at some places, but I think it's to a lesser extent.
Let them go. Being phased out
was probably a bad idea.
Yeah, you can't put them back in. All anyway, I advise everyone to go check out that video. But also, we did feel it. You could hear it, like the paddling and in his voice as he's paddling away from a shark.
It was too. It is scary. A couple of things. Don't forget, tomorrow night, Fox Nation, I'll be streaming it. That is Friday night, the 15th, 8 o'clock, Florida Theater. I want everybody watching. Also, there's some tickets in the second floor in the balcony available. They opened up the whole first half is gone. The back half is now open. And then in St. Louis, March 22nd, as many tickets as we sold in Florida, which is a record, we've actually sold more tickets in for the March 22nd show.
And there's still some tickets left, so definitely go get them in
because
St. Louis.
This theater is too big for us.
No such thing, Brian. We're going to be stopped a lot of time to sell it out.
You think we're going to sell almost 2,000 tickets?
I mean, we're more than halfway there.
And that's like Springsteen.
St. Louis loves you.
Right. I mean, really? I mean, do you think that many people? All right, we'll
see.
We
already have well over 1,000. The other thing, though, for our KLIF Dallas listeners and anyone in the surrounding markets, February 26th, we'll be in Dallas.
Oh, in between this?
Yes. So that's a free event. You can just show up.
It's at a beer place, isn't it?
Yes. It's if you go to KLIF's website, it's on your Facebook page, too. I mean, really, it's just free to show up, and you can have a beer with Brian.
And then we do an hour on radio, don't we, usually?
We're not this time.
Not this time.
Now I just show up. Completely off mic. Everything's off the record. You can talk about anything.
You sure it's off the record?
I mean, as long as you don't go report it on it.
Yeah, I won't report it myself. Quick thing, I was looking for this poll for the longest time. We're just saying, I don't even understand where Democrats going. To Tommy Lahren's credit, she always says, well, here's the weakness. Direction Democrats prefer for their party. For their party, by Gallup. More liberal, 29%. Stay the same, 22%. More moderate, 45%. I mean, that's it. Bill Clinton is your model on some things. But Bill Clinton is the political model. Why don't they understand that? Even Mark Kelly, you think that Mark Kelly profiles that way? He doesn't show any courage politically. You got Fetterman, Manchin, who's not in the business anymore. So they say Governor Shapiro, but every time I say that, I get emails saying, don't keep saying that he's moderate because he sounds it, but he doesn't act it. So who would you be looking at? Forget Jared Polis, too. I bring up Jared Polis to Colorado. Feel like he's not moderate. So who's out there that would be moderate?
Well, we're going to find out. I mean, in what?
Not Newsom.
No, but we'll find out in the next set of primaries, which are going to be here before we know it. If the more centrist Democrats win primaries, then that poll will prove to be true.
Right. But for centrist Democrats, they're going to have to win in a red state in order to get the Senate back. And that means somebody's got to emerge. Independent, center left. Right now I don't see it, but I'm willing to say everybody that could be in is not in. So there might be people out there in the business world, Jamie Dimon or somebody, that might say, well, now I'm getting in because I can see a business person really being ineffective. All right, don't forget One Nation, Saturday night at 9 o'clock, Fox News Channel. See you there.
This week on the Brett Baer Podcast, my all-star panel weighs in on the top stories at home and abroad with founding editor of the Washington Free Beacon, Matthew Cottinetti, Democratic strategist Leslie Marshall, and Fox News radio correspondent Jared Halperin.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.